We have a little tradition on this podcast called Roll for Spoilers.
Okay.
I do have a D20 die, and I do want to ask you if you would reveal anything about the show if I roll high enough.
I know one that I could probably share for Mirka, yeah.
Yeah, go for it. Go for it. I'll find something.
Okay, so I rolled. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Geek Peek. Today, I'm talking with Sandeep and Omar about DesiQuest. We have all been waiting for this interview. We talked about fan questions, we talked about the production, we talked about the set, the battle set, the entire feel of this entire campaign, and this is an amazing conversation. Sandeep joins us a little bit later, but I think you'll love this one. So without further ado, enjoy the interview. Omar Najam, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're here to talk about DesiQuest.
Yes.
I'm so excited to talk to you. Mirka has been one of my favorite characters so far. And I have lots of questions about Mirka and how you view DesiQuest as a world, as a project. So before we actually dive into specifically about Mirka, I do want to ask you, in your mind, what's the inspiration behind DesiQuest?
Wow, what a great, great question. I know that Sandeep and Jasmine, Anjali and Rekha would all have different answers. So I will just keep mine to me personally. I think that in fantasy role-playing games, there are a lot of exotic, exciting, distant locations that you go to. And the idea is you are someone from a place that is quote-unquote normal, and you go somewhere else and you learn about that culture. And in that, you kind of flatten a lot of the characteristics of that place. You know, you might get to know a couple people, but when you're painting with a large brush, the idea is, okay, here's the exciting things about it. Here's just the things that, you know, you as a tourist to pop in, try this, try some food, then get out. And that always kind of struck me as odd because no place ever feels that way to me. Like, even if I'm somewhere for just a couple days, that kind of feels like home for a little bit. And there's also an idea of like stewardship where you're there to observe and participate in. And you are kind of the vulnerable person. Like, you're the one who's kind of like, okay, can I help with stuff? Can I do things? Like, this is your home. I'm just, you know, I'm here in your main story. You know, I'm just a little side character popping in. And so for me, DesiQuest was really the idea of, okay, full stop. Let's set up that world. And all of you come in. You're all technically from a place, but let's explore that concept. You know, let's explore that concept of, what is home to you? What is family to you? And then let's go on an adventure that is exciting without being otherizing. And when Sandeep and Jasmine came to me with that idea for a show, I remember being on the Zoom call in the back of a studio and being like, I had to cover my mouth because they were recording something and I didn't want to like yell in joy. I was like, that's amazing. You know, for a game that a lot of people play to go into a cave and attack kobolds and take their riches, you know, it was so wonderful to instead be like, how do I learn more about myself as a character through this land, whether it's strange or familiar? And so for me, that's kind of the heartbeat of the show.
That's amazing. Like when I look at when I watch DesiQuest, there's such a vibe, there's such a like, the way to explain it is like there is an aroma like of like of the culture that shines through through the episode, and I love how delicate everything looks in terms of like the entire styling, the Indian everything in it, from the decorations to the words that you use, like all of these things. I really love that. I can tell you from my own personal experience, I'm half Yemeni, and So for our culture, there's a lot of traditions for marriage. Like there's a special clothing and all that. Mm-hmm. We also have like all the special foods. And I think it's so amazing to see like DesiQuest as kind of like this first campaign that I've ever seen that actually shines that culture light through, and also like not just like putting it in our face, but also being a very well-made and very good campaign to watch. So in terms of like where you put yourself in the world, what is it like to create the character Mirka for DesiQuest?
That's a wonderful question. I'll try to answer it as quickly and as best as I can. I'm just so stunned by kind of what you just said, because it's so beautiful. It's so true that there is, you know, when I think that getting to play, the best part of DesiQuest for me has been conversations like this, where folks have said, you know, I might not, either I am Desi and I come from this background, or I am, you know, I may not be, but it really touches on what I appreciate and love about my culture. And I think that that's something that is global and universal and oddly enough, not talked about in a lot of this space nearly enough. You know, it's not about how well you mechanically perform. We're bringing in a tradition of storytelling, you know, all of us, no matter where you come from in the world. And sort of bringing that in, and it's not even necessarily making like ancestors happy or something, or like rising to the occasion, but like this is kind of how we think. There's like a rhythm and a heartbeat to everything we do already, and there's stakes too, where the tradition isn't there to just to be like, okay, we do this because it's the thing we do. It's like there's stuff that's important to us, and it's hard for us to communicate that outside of something like art or performance, and so. Conversations like this make me so happy, because I'm just like, yes, 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 yes. Like the clothing, it's like, it's when you say like delicate, that's so true, because it's so like specific and conscious that we're like, it's the food we serve. It's the songs we sing, you know, it's the dances we perform, the rites. And so the poetry that we recite to each other, and my parents are very, they get very emotional at like family events. And it's funny seeing my folks just like suddenly be like reciting Tagore or something. And I'm like, where did this come from? Like you were busy watching Cops and now suddenly, you know, like, you know, an entire book of poetry that you're reading because it's like someone's first birthday. So that just, I just wanted to quickly touch on that. That makes me really happy what you just said. It just fills my heart with so much joy because it's so true. It's who we are. And I love that so much. But, you know, to leapfrog off of that in terms of Vihar, where kind of Mirka came from, I think we all, without discussing it, wanted to tackle parts of Desi culture that we don't see enough of, especially in Western media. And, you know, everyone has such incredible insight into the show and what to explore. Sandeep is playing a character who doesn't quite know if he belongs, which is a terrifying feeling that I personally experience on a regular basis, especially, you know, when I visit India. I've never been to Pakistan myself, but when I'm talking with folks who are from Pakistan, you know, it's always a thing where I'm like, am I faking this? You know, like, am I, it's really happening. Rekha is exploring identity as someone who is talented but unrecognized, you know, in a business sense, who is loved, but do they mean something more outside of their family? And then Anjali is doing such a great job eviscerating the problems of like Bollywood and Hollywood. Like every single scene that she has, she just, I'm like, yes, that this is an essay. This is a lecture. Like go off, please. Jasmine, of course, is carrying the weight of everything else. And so I wanted to, especially when the fantasy land that's set in the subcontinent, I wanted to think about what's the technology of that. And I think that's something we take for granted a lot, where you see shows where they're like, oh, the pyramids were just built. And you're like, whoa, hold on. The pyramids weren't just built. That's incredible. Like, that's amazing. How did they do that? Like, that, like, walk us through that, because I don't know how I could sit down and have that genius and plan out that architecture, plan out that organizing. Where did you source those materials from? How did you transport them? And I feel like there's a little bit of like hand waving magic when it comes to older, you know, fantasy or ancient stuff where you're just like, yeah, but they kind of just did it and it's history now. And so I wanted to kind of be a character that could stop, and every moment we see something where it's like, here's a vehicle that goes by, I wanted to play a character that went, Jasmine, time out. How is that happening? I would love to know. In this world that you've, you know, put so much care into, can you take me through how that mechanically functions, where that came from, and who wanted to do things and why? Because then out of that, we get a philosophy behind the technology of a world that, while it is, you know, distant and fantasy, is incredibly technologically brilliant. And that doesn't happen by accident. That doesn't happen in a way that we can take it for granted. I wanted to get a little under that skin and find out who are the people that care enough about things like medicine, transportation, organization, entertainment. And so that was kind of the impetus behind, you know, building someone who can then build robots.
Yeah, the actual thought of like having a player who builds robots in a world which is like, I don't know, maybe it's just not like my own preconception of like fantasy stories are not do not actually always have technology. And then, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm, when Murka gets introduced, I'm like, wait, robots? players like Sitara mm-hmm, can talk directly into your head. And, like, she has magic. And, you have this player, this character in the world, which is, like, I solve things with science.
Right. It is, as much as I would love to say that there is some greater aesthetic or mechanical decision behind that, a lot of when you're at a table with such wonderful players and an incredible world builder and GM like Jasmine, and then you're getting directed by incredible directors like Michael Schrobach, and, you know, and the entire crew is some of the best folks I've ever had a chance to work with, including television and film work. Like, these folks moved at a clip, got everything, were the kindest. No one was stressed. It was just absolutely the best. Our producer Ash was, I've never felt safer on a project, because I'm just like, okay, if something goes wrong, we can get Ash. And so we were so taken care of, and it was such a well-oiled machine that I felt comfortable playing a character who is a little bit of a problem. And I think that that's really fun. Like, in, A Court of Fame Flowers, I was like, what if I just played a guy? Like, what if I built not a good, this person won't be good at things. And what if they were like really mediocre stat wise? This is the biggest mistake you'd want to do on a very popular show. So let's make the mistake. I think I repeated the beat a little bit for this, or I got to repeat the beat where you're right. You live in a world of magic where, you know, technically you could dimension door your way to someplace. You know, you could teleport, you can read people's minds, you know, you can speak with animals. And the idea of someone being like, I can't, was really funny to me. And that person fits in just as much as anybody else, you know, in that world and in that ecosystem. And that was something that I kind of really dug. I love the idea of, you know, us just getting to do that.
That's so cool. There is such a vibe to Murka, which, like, it's so amazing. Like, you always have like those moments where Murka will do the unexpected things. That's the vibe I get from Murka. Like, Murka will do the things that we don't expect. And also, I feel like In terms of gameplay, I'm not sure. Like, I don't think Murka is a very powerful in terms of strength. But can you mm-hmm. share a little bit about how Murka is structured in terms of, like, being an artificer? In that world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, like, while there isn't necessarily, okay, let's call a spade very quickly. Ludduanti is the tank. Like, we just knew this going in. And I think that around the world, everyone recognized this. Like, an Unti traveling with this group of jokers is the strongest person you'll ever meet. Is going to have the highest constitution, is going to have your highest strength. Like, that is someone who, like, can turn an army away just by holding up a sandal. You know, like, this is going to be the character. And so I was like, okay, we've got that covered. That's so great. That's such a good, like, beat to play. Because I have aunties in my life that I'm just like, I remember there was one winter holiday, my siblings and I got into a furious fight. And we were just going at each other in a way that, like, you can only go into each other if you know each other and love each other. Like, it was just daggers, you know, word-wise. And my mom just went, hey, and we stopped. And that was the end of the conversation. It just took all of the air out of that argument. And so I was like, okay, we've got Ludduanti at the table. We're set. What is another way to explore those ideas of strength and vulnerability? And what I wanted to do when I was looking at the different classes was I wanted to have a character that can kind of do a lot of different moves. And the idea of setting up a lot of plays was interesting to me because it's almost the opposite of, like, one of your classes that, like, is there to help folks. Like, you know, like, you have, you know, Sandeep is playing a healer. And I think that's incredible because he's playing a healer with a very severe wound, which is, you know, not knowing where he comes from and, you know, not knowing if he belongs home. And that's really fun to play because you're helping everyone, but who's seeing how hurt you are? And we get to explore that, you know, on the airship. I don't want to say too many spoilers in case people are catching up. But for Murka, I wanted it to be the opposite where I want to throw a bunch of balls in the air and then and you're kind of doing like, hey, I'm throwing some assists up. Does anyone recognize these? And if you like them, grab one of those and run with it. And so, you know, we've got like a little moving cannon. I've got a little robot child that can do some, you know, that I will only employ to like carry things. I will not throw him into a fight ever. I have things that I can imbue people with so that they'll be able to do stuff. There's a rock that can project an image. You know, we have all of these possibilities and you're kind of creating a bunch of tools that then encourage us at the table to play with one another and to take one's idea and then race with it and actualize it. And I think that that was such a blast to be able to kind of provide a bunch of needles for us to sew the tapestry of the action scenes. Cause you can just all main character syndrome out and everyone just attacks one NPC and you just chip away at the HP, chip away at the HP. And then finally someone gets down to one and you do it. Or it's a team building exercise where you're kind of bouncing off of each other and learning about each other. And then sometimes you each, you know, cut each other off and then you have a role play scene after that where you're like, you know, I was setting something up and I was doing this. And they're just like, yeah, but I don't believe in that or whatever, you know, whatever reason they didn't engage with that. We then get to have that needle, you know, making that tapestry. And so going for the artificer was, I was just like, this will be fun. There's a lot of opportunity to connect with people. Which I think oftentimes we think of technology as distancing each other, whereas I wanted to have a character that said that that's not true.
That's amazing. Like the a character that uses technology to connect people.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. That's amazing. I love that. Also, I wanted to touch on there's this feature of DesiQuest that I haven't seen in any campaigns, and that's the tea kettle.
Yes.
So I gotta ask you, as a player at the table, were you expecting to have a player like being removed with the DM and have a private conversation while you guys are still at the table? How did that work out for you as a player at the table?
It was, well, first of all, we got in trouble. I do want to be clear about that, because we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know what was happening. We weren't allowed to go in there. Every so often, a good friend of mine, Kiri Callahan, was on set, and she was making chai for us, and every so often would stop in the tent and then emerge with chai. And we're like, that's not the kitchen. What's happening? And so we were calling it Kiri Chai, which one day has to be merch. We all have to have Kiri Chai shirts. But I just knew that there was tea there. That's all I knew. And so when we had the first one, and I believe it was Anjali gets pulled away, it gets whisked away, the rest of us were sitting there, and they were kind of just like, just be here. And so what we did was we kind of started to play our own mini game, where I was like, okay, Mirka is going to run you all through a 5e campaign within this world. So imagine that we had to just stop somewhere and that you all were going to play. And then it was such a bad game that it was just like Reka, like Leduanti shook someone's hand and then did a strength check and like critted and then like broke the person's arm or something. And we thought it was so funny that we were laughing. And that's why Anjali goes, be quiet. And so, so first and foremost, it was a flashback to being a little Desi child, of us just like giggling in a corner and then someone being like, hey, we're doing something here, and being like, oh, sorry. So it was very familiar on some level. But on the other, it made a really interesting mechanic story-wise, because then someone had a secret. And yes. We didn't know. We genuinely did not know what was discussed. I don't think I knew until the episodes premiered. And I don't want to ruin anything, but there's some things that I still won't know until the final few episodes are released.
Wow.
And so I think that there's a beautiful scene between Anjali and Reka, where there's a lot of disagreement bubbling up, where Anjali is saying, you know, like, oh, it would be horrible to lie to someone. That would hurt my feelings. And then Reka's like, yeah, it would hurt my feelings too. I would hate if someone did that. Yeah, wouldn't you hate if someone did that? I would. Why are you saying it like I'm doing that? And there was something that Anjali knew that we didn't. And I think that it led to, at a table where the players know each other and trust each other, it leads to a really interesting dynamic as long as you seek out to solve that conflict. And I think that that's great, because it, Jasmine essentially like saw us and was like, I want to split you two up. And so I can watch you come together. You know, like I want to split up the family and I want to see how you find love. And then, you know, later there's in a later episode, Reka has her character operated by someone else. Again, I don't want to spoil anything, but solving that conflict later and those emotional issues, again, it's great storytelling. So I love it. I feel bad for any show that does it afterwards, because the bar set very high by Jasmine.
Yeah. Like in terms of Jasmine's plans, mm-hmm. How much were any of you like privy to what was going to happen in terms of the story? And also, DesiQuest has the most guest players ever.
yes.
Like, it's amazing. And like, so many people, like, I don't know who's going to be. I know we're filming this just for you guys. We're filming this before episode 5 airs.
Yes.
And I know that in episode 5, Erica Ishii appears.
Yes. The great Erica.
All of them, like all of the guest players that have been so far are so amazing. In terms of like, what were the plans? What were you, as players who created your characters in the world, what did you know going into this about what, like where the plot and the DM will take you?
Okay, so here's what's wild. My experience up until DesiQuest was you chat with a GM and you kind of give a little bit of a roadmap A little bit. Like, you don't railroad too much. But, you know, on Fae and Flowers, we kind of sat down and went through, like, what are some fun things to explore? What are some themes? So you kind of have an idea. You might not know where the final chips land, but you have an idea of what we're going to play with. You might not know what other characters are playing with, and that changes. And maybe you change an ultimate decision, like I know that and Hera did, where it was like, oh, I hate the system. Now that I've learned everything that Serena has put onto the table, I burn it to the ground. I was in a show, Power Play, where that GM, Rick Budd, we had hour-long calls kind of talking about what movies we want to reference, you know, where we're coming from and those stories. And that was beautiful to me because it felt a little bit like we got to craft a novel together. And then getting to watch other characters, you know, have their novels actualized was such a joy. For this, man, I got to tell you, Jasmine was like, what's your deal? And then I laid it out and you watched the wheels turn and she went, okay, I got it. And I was like, should we do anything else? You want to discuss anything else? Make any plans? No, I got it. I got you. Okay, that's really scary, Jasmine. I know. And it was. And their episodes, you know, like we're talking about, like last week's or the previous episode, episode 4, there was a look that Jasmine gave me where it was like, okay, I'm about to destroy you right now. And I just watched it happen in real time. And I was like, are you kidding? This is horrible. What's that? Like, this is, you're pushing me to the edge. You're pushing Marcus to the edge. You're pushing as a performer. I've never been more challenged to, like, have this moment of how do you play just about to break. And the thing is, you can only do it with a GM like Jasmine, where it is that thing of like, I have a perfect read on you. Okay, I've got some NPCs that are gonna push you a little bit. And it's across the board. I mean, she got Sandeep to cry. You know, when we're flying through the sky, and then she's just like, well, go ahead and do it. You know, like, go ahead and make that big, leave. If you want to leave the table, leave the table. You know, just tell everyone why. And it got us to a place where I was like, this is such an emotional moment. So to answer your question, not a lot. You know, we knew where we were coming from. We didn't know where we were being tossed into. And sometimes it was very stressful because it is that thing where you're just like, yeah, what's happening here? Like, what's going on? Are we doing this bad? Are we doing it wrong? And there's no wrong. There's no right. You then get to that final beat and then you're just like, oh, and you're in a forest and there's a statue. And it all just coalesces and you go, this is what it's like to live in a fairy tale. Like, that's the, you know, that's the only way I can put it. Like, it was just that where you're just like, wow, this world is huge and this universe exists so much outside of our characters. And I love it. So to answer your question in short, not a lot. I personally didn't know a lot. Maybe Sandeep might have been privy to more as, you know, a producer and the guy who made the show happen. But for me, I just was at the table holding on with white knuckles.
Okay. Wow. Like, it's such a Jasmine thing to ask, like, what's your deal? Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Like, yeah. truly.
I mean, truly. Like, the actual vibe of Jasmine as a DM, I remember from Battle for Beyond. Mm-hmm. Which was like a year ago, maybe a little more. Like, I remember that little campaign, 6 episodes, and I'm like, oh my god, this is going such, like, in such a place where I didn't expect.
Yes.
So epic. So I'm kind of like, I don't know what to expect. And I know there aren't a lot of episodes left. Like, I think, how many episodes are left now? Like, tonight, it's going to be the 5th episode. So are there 6 total?
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Sandeep is here to answer all the producer questions.
I sensed your hesitation. Because
I'm trying to remember, because I know that we had this. There had been several discussions, so I don't want to misquote. I don't want to be wrong.
We adapted to what we had got in the can, because initially we had greenlighted 7 episodes from our Kickstarter, and then just how it shaped up in the edit made more sense to do 8. So there's going to be 8 episodes.
Little bonus. So
we're just crossing the halfway threshold with episode 5 today.
That's amazing. Also, Sandeep, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Sorry that I'm late. I'm sorry that preschoolers don't give a crap about podcast schedules. They just don't care. You know, as much as I tried to explain to my son that this is what matters in life, he was like, "Well, I want to be pushed on the swing, and I'm gonna throw a fit if you don't do that." So, you know,
I'm the same way. If that helps.
Oh yeah, I know.
Now that you joined us, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Omar at the very beginning.
How do I want to know? Maybe it's Maybelline.
That too, if you want to answer that. in terms of like inspiration for DesiQuest, in your mind, I got Omar's opinion about this. But in your mind, what's the inspiration behind DesiQuest as a project?
The inspiration, you know, it came from Jasmine. I mean, it's she met with my company, Effin' Funny, after we had gamed together on a one-shot with The Guild, which is the Guild is a show that I acted in 2 billion years ago, approximately. And we started over the pandemic doing, some D&D because it was the only thing that we could think to do. while we're wasting away at our homes, we couldn't really produce out in the world. And so then we started rotating all these DMs through. We had wonderful DMs, Abria, and Ivan Van Norman, and Amy Vorpal. And then lo and behold, we get Jasmine. And I'm relatively new to the D&D space. So this was like my first real experience playing D&D was through the Guild and meeting all these incredible DMs. So when I met Jasmine, I was like, wow, she's incredible. And not only is she incredible, but she's South Asian, and that's intriguing to me. And so I just was like, what is your deal? I want to know what your deal is. And so we had a meeting. I have a little production company, and my business partner, Anand Shah, another South Asian dude. We asked her the question that we ask every creator that comes through our doors that we love and want to see blossom in this world, you know, which is, what is it that no one's greenlighting or saying yes to that you can't stop thinking about or that you won't let go of? What's that script that's either sitting up in the shelf that's wasting away, but you can't stop thinking about, make happen, or whatever project? And she said, I just always wanted to do an actual play that was with an all South Asian cast, with an all Desi cast. And I said, well, I'm in if you'll have me. I was immediately excited about the concept because that meant my chances of getting cast were very high. So I was like, look, further soul searching about it, it was, we don't often get the opportunity in LA as Indian Americans or Pakistani Americans or South Asian Americans in general, to, at least here in Hollywood, to be in a cast of all Desi folks. Just like, that's not something that comes along. We're mostly competing against each other. Things are changing, but we're mostly competing against each other. You go to an audition room and you're vying for the one role, and it's all, you know, you see the same folks, and so there's some camaraderie in the competition, but at the same time you're like, yeah, only one of us is getting this thing, you know. Only one of us is getting the guest star. So I think for Jasmine, she felt the same way in the TTRPG space. Was like, oh, it's nice to be a guest on this and a guest on that, but wouldn't it be cool if like we were the ones inviting the guests on and we had a whole table for us? And I think she wanted to creatively has always been tinkering with this whole space, you know, which ended up becoming Vihar, that is just populated in this universe, in this world that is sort of inspired by South Asian mythology and her experience she has an incredible wealth of knowledge about like South Asian medieval, you know, that whole universe, really like weaponry and all this stuff. And so I think she wanted to really create that world. And so we fancy ourselves world builders, and supporters of folks that want to build worlds that we're excited about. So it was for Anand and I, it was just like, how can we help you? Like whatever we can do to help, we're in.
And from there, DesiQuest goes to Kickstarter and gets launched through the community. And now we are watching it happen. It's really amazing. Like all of what I've seen so far, I'm so excited. Like I'm also a little bit upset with you, because you are releasing the episodes when it's 4 a.m. my time. and I'm actually considering whether to actually wake up and watch it like as it's premiering. But I guess I won't do it.
We should send you some breakfast.
But I do want to ask you, Sandeep, you created your character Ashwathama, also known as Ash, in the campaign. What was kind of like your idea / inspiration / like what yeah. was behind creating Ashwathama and being that person yeah. in Vihar?
It was just based on how I feel when I go to visit India, you know, like this, NRI, this ABCD, this, like kind of outsider. So I wanted to sort of play that out, the anxieties that I feel in that. I felt like that would come from a very real place. And so I developed a character that was like, that represented that for me, and I thought that would be sort of cathartic and interesting, and you know, I have a son now, so like I think a lot of about you know, what his culture, like his relationship to his culture is going to be, and so I thought, oh, this will be a really fun way to explore that, and that sort of living in between two worlds thing that us ABCDs kind of experience. And so yeah, I just thought, yeah, let's do it, and then sort of creating the mythology around like the world he comes from and have it being Germanically inspired. I really just wanted to do a silly German accent for The Legend of Neil, the show I created many years ago, and I thought that would be a fun little like Easter egg for those fans. And I was, and then we just kind of built on it. So I was like, oh, that's a fun accent that I know I can live in that accent for a long time and not feel, you know, it's not a reach for me to find. So I was like, oh, let's create a sort of mythology around that. And then we came up with Brezelwald and Ash, this is actually coincidental, but Ash Minnick is our producer, and Ash Minnick, it's not named after her really, 'cause I wanted to name the character like a really long Indian name that had a cool nickname. And so I like, that's why I landed on Ashwathama, but it was, so it just worked out that Ash Minnick is also like, she has a Germanic background, and speaks German. And so she helped me like come up with ideas for, 'cause I really just had this stupid idea that like it'd be in this forest that is made of pretzels basically. And that like this world in this developing nation, they like mine these or like harvest this like pretzel material, just like they're great. Their one big export was pretzels, and that like they use it for everything. It's like their lamba spread. It's their like building material. It's it's just everything to that culture. I just kind of ran with it. So now I'm this Banaras character that has a monkey tail. And is from the world of pretzels.
I really love like the dichotomy between yourself and Ash, because you are funny. you're doing stand-up. Even now, like in the 10 minutes in this conversation, you've managed to make us...
I like this guy.
You guys laugh so much. And in contrast to that, you created...
My character is not funny.
No, I mean, like, it's not that Ash is not funny, but I feel like Ash, at least to me, Ash seems to be coming from a place of pain in terms of like the pain that he has because he doesn't know his culture. He doesn't know like... He doesn't know parts of himself, and what is it like to kind of inhabit that person? Is that like something that like you draw from a personal place in your life, or
definitely? It's definitely drawn from a personal place. It's also really challenging as a person who gets this validation from people laughing. It's really hard. For me personally to like be the not like and to sit next to Reka and then watch her just like throw haymakers all day and be like everyone's so good at that table and so it is challenge. It is just like weird. It's a weird challenge, but it's also one I just sort of took on intentionally is like, and I think one that, like a gauntlet that Jasmine threw at me a little bit, being like, hey, you know, your play style is like, because you'll see me in other games or whatever, and I'm very like, I go straight for comedy. But she, you know, she's like, look, doing a show for, these aren't just one shots. That's like normally what I play a lot of one shots and stuff, or like short little mini series. And so it's easier to go for comedy for those. But this is like a different experience. It just felt the whole vibration of this thing was like a different, just a different world. It was less about playing for laughs, and it was more about sort of this exploration of our culture together. And so I felt like, oh, well, then this is an opportunity really to step out of my comfort zone and try something new and try something a little bit more dramatic and or rooted in, like I said, like in the development of the character, it was just really rooted in this anxiety, this feeling of being out of place, and I thought, what cooler way to explore that than through a role playing game? And I knew I'd be safe at the table to try it too. Like that I felt like I knew that Jasmine would take care of me. I knew that I think I felt super comfortable with Omar and Reka and Anjali. Like this, I just knew that it would be okay to not be funny, to try and swing for something a little bit more emotionally real.
That's like, I love the kind of care that you took in creating that character. And also one thing I want to ask both of you, this project DesiQuest, I'm kind of hesitating to call it a season because there is this vibe that there might be another one, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But this specific campaign, this story, you had the benefit of having like minis and Rick Perry and battle sets. How was that in terms of like walking through battles and walking through maybe even like seeing the world right in front of you in terms of like sets on the table?
I mean, the reveals of it, because we would leave the room and then come back in and then see it all presented. It's kind of unreal. Like it reminds me of the first time I played D&D, I was gifted dice, and it there was something about the tangibility of it. We're building so much in this treehouse, the collective treehouse of our imaginations, getting something that is in front of you that you could touch, you know, and look at is so great, cuz we got to do things where like obviously in combat it's the best, because you're like, how far am I? I'm not close enough, and there's that tension, like there's so much fun to be had on the map. But then also, like, we, you know, when we're on an airship, it's just like, who am I near? And you're looking down at them and you're looking at a little theater, and it's just, I don't know, it's unreal. There's kind of nothing like it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. It was my first experience playing with minis to that level, that caliber. I mean, but Knox was our Knox Burff was our like minis creator, and then Fawn Davis was our production designer, and their whole studio, you know, built a lot of these sets, and then Knox was our painter and all of it. So like, it was just this incredible, insane team we had, right? like. So Fawn is, you know, comes from like making stuff for Star Wars and Star Trek and like huge shows and IP. And they have this absolute like Willy Wonka factory for like minis with these like crazy 3D printers that can like print clothes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the place is like insane. So we're very lucky to have them on as co-producers, Fawnco. And then Knox brought just his wealth of talent, and I think his resume, you know, in the D&D space really speaks for it, or in the TTRPG space speaks for itself. I mean, he's like involved in every cool project. He's probably made something. So like, to have him sort of commit to this as well was like, it just was like, we had this super team. And and so yeah, it was, I think you're right, the reveals were like just so magical. You know, it felt, I just felt like giddy, right? It was just like a giddy feeling, being like, okay, it was interesting for me because I'm a executive producer on the show, and this is the first time that as an executive producer, I was not I had to be sort of divorced from a lot of the construction of this stuff because they had to keep all those story elements secret because I was also a player in the show. So like, wow. It was wild to think about like, okay, I know the budget we spent on this stuff. I know what we, like, resources we have and, like, how it was allocated and stuff like that. But, like, I never knew how it was, like, I was really, yeah, just separate from the process of it actually developing. So it was like a particular, like, wonder to be like, oh, yeah, oh, we spent that money. What? Holy shit, that's what they made for that? Oh, my God, that's amazing.
It was also, like, like you were saying, Sandeep, like we're in a building that's got like minis of from like Nightmare Before Christmas and James the Giant Peach and like you're saying Star Wars and stuff. And so getting to see these other pieces, it felt like it was all part of that like legacy. Yeah. And it was amazing to be like, oh my gosh, a place where they were like, you know, there was like pieces from Jurassic Park and stuff that were there. And then it's like, you're looking at the timeline of all these things. And then Daisy Quest is also there. And that felt amazing where it's just like, what have you all filmed here? This and this, and we did this, and we did this, and we changed the world this way. Oh, and then, and you know, Daisy Quest. And then we did this movie and this movie, and we're like, oh, cool. We're in. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. We're on the list, baby. Yeah. It's cool. Like it's that thing. I've been in this business for 20 years and you know, it's just such an, what do you call it's, you know, perfect evidence of it's the people that make that you meet along the way and the authentic relationships you meet along the way that like sort of lead you to these like incredible moments, right? It wasn't, we had a bunch of money to hire Fawn. It was, I've worked with Fawn before on a different project. You know, Jasmine's worked on a project with Fawn before. So it's just like this natural, like, yeah, of course I'll do your project, guys. Like, whatever it takes kind of thing. And then, you know, realizing like, this is all we have, buddy. This is all we got. And he's like, cool. Like, let me come on and co-produce and get more instead of being like, oh shit, well, I got too much stuff going on. Sorry, I'm out. It's more like, well, how can I get more involved in a way that is more sweat equity? Can I get, you know, some piece of the upside of the project, you know, because I believe in you guys and I want it to succeed. It was just more of a lean forward experience when you have this opportunity to be able to work with these people that you've grown up with throughout the years. So it's cool, perfect storm.
That's amazing. Like the entire thinking about like seeing all the minis, all the battle set, that like gives me the Dimension 20 vibe and like Critical Role vibe. And, like, it's such a such an amazing part of the story also to see those battles take place. Okay, so we do have a few fan questions. But before we actually do the fan questions, we have a little tradition on this podcast called Roll for Spoilers. So it's not going to be interesting for episode 5, but I do have a D20 die. And I do want to ask you if you would reveal anything about the show, about episodes that we haven't seen yet, if I roll high enough. It could be anything.
I'm trying to think of like what I can reveal.
I know one that I could probably share for Mirka. Something? Yeah.
Okay, so I will roll, and then if I roll a
Go for it.
Yeah,
go
if I roll a one, like you can basically lie to my face. By the way, it did happen on this podcast. Right. I did roll a one once. Okay, so I rolled a 7.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm fair.
What can we say for a 7? Yeah. What's like a 7? What's a 7 spoiler?
7 spoiler. I think it feels like it's like, you know, it should be like an Oracle type phrase where it's like very nebulous. You know, it's like, wait, does that mean I should double down or should I leave? And they're like, yes. You know? So it needs to be something like that, I think. Let's see.
I'm trying to think of a 7 insight check.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Right. A very important insight check happens.
Yeah.
I'll say, how about this? I'm trying to channel my best Jasmine. The drama of the gods that were once staged bleed into the audience and come to life.
That's really good. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'll say.
That's really good. Okay. I'll give one for Mirka. That's a 7. Which is, he has a very handsome reflection.
Very handsome reflection. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool, cool, cool.
You heard it here first.
There you go.
Okay, so now we can do some fan questions. Okay, let me move it here so I can actually look at the question as I'm still looking at you guys. Okay, so the first question comes to us from Cody. It's two questions, one for Sandeep and one for Omar. Let's start with Sandeep. How often are you asked about the Guild reunion or continuation?
Like, I'd say on average once a month. For my entire life.
On the first of every month.
It's not terrible. Yeah, it's like, it's when rent's due. So it's not all the time, but, you know, it's like, you know, 12 times a year. So 12 times congratulations, a year. Okay. Cody. You covered January.
Okay, and the question for you, Omar, do you have any plans or wishes to run a game in the dome for Dropouts?
I would love to. I would absolutely love to. I'll say that, I don't want to cause problems for anyone. I don't know what programming is looking like. I 100% have an idea that I have been, that I don't want to pitch to Abria because I want to keep some secrets in case it ever happens and I'm lucky enough to have her at the table. But I have an idea that I'm just like, for the dome specifically, there's some fun stuff we could do. So, yes. But that's not an official thing at all. That's just me in my diary going, dear diary, here's what I would love to do if it ever happened.
And I know you don't want to embarrass yourself by asking, but the answer is yes, Omar. I'd love to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
What a
so
great
you're welcome.
Impression of Abria. Oh. That was really great.
Damn.
I also can't tell Sandeep. This is a horrible. Like, I just have to tell like my parents who know nothing about TTRPGs except for the two times they've played D&D. Where my mom decided at the end to turn into a jet to fight a mummy. So they are the only people I can trust to hold this secret.
Roll for jet. Amazing.
Okay. That's so cool. So good. The next question is from Fire Seal. And the question is, do you guys accept Tribute of the Arts? In parentheses, fan arts.
Oh.
Do we accept them?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Now be careful, Sandeep. Yes. Be careful. You don't know what you're agreeing to.
Yeah. Who would say no? Yeah, wait. What am I saying yes to?
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe someone permission to actually like maybe depict. I get where this is coming from.
Yes.
I love fan art. I mean, I think fan art is it's incredible. It's always mind blowing to me. It's more like feel such an mm-hmm. honor, you know, that someone would like spend their time and their artistic talents on creating, you know, a depiction of the character that we create. It's awesome.
I can't do any visual art at all. Like, it's so when people are like, I just did this thing, I'm like, what do you mean you just did this? This is impossible to me. Like, that's someone like, hey, do you mind if I lift a bus with my bare hands? Like, oh, by all means, please. Like, that's incredible. It's the most inspiring, touching, and humbling thing, I think, in this entire process.
Yeah.
Is folks being like, I made some visual art out of this. And I'm just like, how? This is great. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay.
Have at it. And please post it to our Discord. Post it to the F and Funny Discord so we can all check
Yeah, what
it
can
out
we do to promote this please. Art? Well,
we have a fan art
Discord, so. Social media,
tag us,
Instagram,
tag us,
please.
Yeah,
amazing. Okay, the next question comes to us from Ray, and the question for both Omar and Sandeep. We all have multiple interests and influences in our lives. You're both writers, actors, gamers, builders, etc. What's the one skill or activity you love more than the others? Tell us the truth. What's your one true love? In parentheses, even if it's just 1% more than the others.
Ooh. Pick a favorite child kind of thing. Huh?
Yeah. Ooh.
So it's of our professional skills? I can't pick.
I think so.
Pick wiffle
ball.
It's
like at the table.
Okay. All right. Oh, at the table. Okay. Sorry. You go. You. I don't know.
Say this. I think this isn't necessarily like the one that I'm most proud of, per se. It's not like a thing where I'm like, okay, this is. If I were to put it onto a resume, I would jot this down. But I have always been like a very weird person, like a very odd kid. And so I learned, I wanted to study comedy and improv to kind of just like fit in. And, you know, especially I went to a high school that was, it helped sometimes to fit in. Like sometimes it could be a little rough and I love it. I'm from San Jose. Mm-hmm. It's a town that made me, but pretty early on, I was like, I got to do it. So I think for me, the joy is to say something that to me is very normal and for it to get a laugh and not a laugh at someone, but of people being like, why do you think that way? And it's very accepting and loving. And I have, you know, improv training and I'll do those sort of setups and and landings. And then there's other things where I'll just say something to someone in one of our scenes, and then Jasmine goes, "You have no idea how rude you're being right now." And it's like, oh, that wasn't me trying to play that. That's me just speaking my truth. That's really funny. And so I think getting those genuine laughs of just being yourself and people being like, that's really weird and we love that. That to me means a lot, because I hope that then other people who are also odd ducks feel accepted and celebrated, and that there is no like wrong because you're not hurting someone's feelings. But like, just by it's great being weird. It's great to be an odd little person. And so I think those laughs for me, I think those are my favorite. That's my favorite little skill.
Can you read that list again? That's great. I mean, that's great. Can you read that list that she gave? They gave.
Okay. You're both writers, actors, gamers, builders, etc. What's the one skill or activity you love more than the others? Tell us the truth. Okay. What's your one?
Because it's not necessarily at the table. Okay, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything.
For me, my love is directing. Like that is my true, my real happy place is directing a show, in some capacity, and like having I love having the team kind of behind the project and trying to be a servant to the story and shepherd the story as best, you know, I can with this team. I just love that atmosphere. I guess I enjoy being like the somewhat of the linchpin to it. Like I like that responsibility. It feels it activates my brain, mm-hmm. in a way that feels like it's both the right side of my brain super creative and the left side of my brain super logical and trying to solve the puzzle while also like, you know, playing. So I really love that. I love that energy the most, I think. You know, I love performing is really great, but it feels more right-brained, and it's like just like kind of it's a little like, you know, eating at the candy store and at some point you're like, I want lunch, you know. Like I need a sandwich, you know. And so I think, you know, that directing represents, it's like, yeah.
And you have it's like official, right, that you have a thing coming up that's going to scratch that itch, right?
Well, what's official is that I'm going to be directing a movie this year. Ooh. Or at least setting a date to direct a movie before the end of the year. So that's like that's like our plan right now, is to direct a film, a feature. That's like what if our company focus last year was, hey, we are going to make this TTRPG with Jasmine come hell or high water. It's been a long time coming. I've wanted to be a feature film director for forever. I've directed a bunch of other, I've directed everything else in some ways, you know, series and commercials and sketches and interactive, you know, choose your own adventure style video game FMV shows. Like I've said, like all sorts of stuff, but the thing I've always wanted to do is direct a film. And yeah, I think just like it's such a monumental challenge, and it's hard to find funding for independent films. And I think I finally landed on a great creative partner in Reka. Mm-hmm. She wrote an amazing script. And so we're teaming up to put that, make that happen. Yes. This year, 2024. Yes. Manifesting it. So, yeah, very excited.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Wow. Okay. Sandeep, the next question is for you from Sven.
Oh, I know Sven. I know this person. Yeah, they're in our community. Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. I'm buckling up.
Buckle up. Okay. While the inspiration for Ash's tale presumably comes from various Vanara figures, was the decision to go with such a character design based more on visual aesthetic choices or story direction initially?
So it's two things for me. I love me some monkeys. I love them. They're great. They're awesome. And I've always loved Hanuman, who's like, the monkey god from the Ramayana. And so, you know, like that's, this is what RPGs are all about. It's like, you get to be whatever you want, you know, and it just felt like, okay, so I want a tail. I want it to be, you know, from the race of monkeys. So there was that just kind of just pure, you know, joy, childhood kind of getting to play my version of, you know, the Indian version of Superman or whatever in Hanuman. There was that. And then the other piece for me was when in developing the sort of emotional reality of that character was I wanted him to have like a Luther. If you're familiar with that Key and Peele sketch where Barack Obama has his anger man, his like angry counterpart in Luther. So it's like he represented Barack Obama's anger. And I wanted the tail to be able to represent that, like, because Ash is so sweet and nice, and he's like very, you know, he doesn't want to ruffle any feathers. He's like, you know, doesn't want to offend anybody. But what happens is when he feels like when he's being called bad uncle over and over again, it hurts his heart. It's like it's very painful, you know. And he does it already just sort of like it sort of opens the scab for what he's, you know, this wound that he already has where he feels so disconnected and feels like a, you know, a stranger in his own in his own culture, in his own body kind of thing. And so, but instead of outwardly doing anything about that, he'll just kind of like smile and internalize it and be like, okay, and that's fine. But like his tail will not. His tail holds the grudge. His tail is fucking mad. His tail, like that's, it's like it all goes to his tail. And so I wanted his tail to like be kind of a representative of that more id like response, something that he's done so well at suppressing his whole life in trying to be a people pleaser and trying to, you know, make sure that he doesn't ruffle any feathers. Yeah. So that it served that purpose for me.
That's amazing. It's like that saying that if you have stress in your body and you don't have any outlet to get it out, it will create a kind of like injuries and like all these health problems. And I think for Ash, that the tail is the creative outlet to get all that stress out.
Yes.
Love that.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not always healthy. It's not healthy. Like, I don't think it's a good thing. Like, you know, it's like probably this is not like he ends up hitting Butcha in the first episode, right? Like, and that becomes it's like the slap, you know, moment. It's not good that he's, you know, avoiding those feelings. And hopefully that's a place of growth for him.
Okay. The next question we have is from DMan1198.
Yes.
And the question,
our faithful mod and admin DMan.
It is for both of you because there isn't a specific person who should answer this. If you had the chance to do a Freaky Friday episode of DesiQuest, whose character would you want to play?
Ooh. I want to say Ledwanti.
Yeah, I was going to say Ledwanti too. I mean, it's just like, seems like it's just, right? Like, you could just, like,
us, either.
It seems like endless wellspring of comedy.
Either of our characters as Ledwanti is like Tony Stark and the Hulkbuster. Like suit, but us, like Tony knows how to use the Hulkbuster suit. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't, so we're just in this. We're in a position of so much power, and I just can't imagine Ash or Mirka adapting to that very well. Of like saying something and people listening.
No.
Like that would be a new experience for us.
Right. That's so true. Yeah, the like immediate like respect that it demands being a powerful auntie. A barbarian auntie, no less. I mean, I just feel like that would be, I think it would be fun to be Mirka. I just feel like you played it. So like, how can anybody else in the world play Mirka, but Omar, but I think just like I have an attraction to the artificer class, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, like I think there's something to that. You just feel like you can, you know, create anything, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. It'd be fun to play with. I've played an artificer once in a one shot at Gen Con, and that was fun. And
it's a good time,
but hard, challenging.
Yeah. If either of us were Sitara, I feel like we would, that would be a Freaky Friday situation of errors.
Can anyone,
like,
yeah. I was like, can anyone else do what
Anjali's it would be so like, it would have to be like, she's awful. About to do a huge interview and we get Freaky Friday. And then they're just like, tell us about your newest. Yeah. And it would be like,
yeah.
It was a pleasure working with everyone. Okay, where was your inspiration for the character?
Yeah.
The script.
Yeah, yeah. It would be a challenge.
Okay, the next question is from Magic Man.
Mm.
And the question is, what time period is the DesiQuest setting take place? Like, is it 1920s India?
Oh,
definitely not 1920s. It's definitely earlier-ish, but it's also like, because it's like technologically advanced, there's this like sort of Wakanda aspect to it where it's like, it's not like, I think it's supposed to be medieval. Like the world is in its like medieval stage, but then Vahar is the like most technologically advanced society, as opposed to how South Asia and India is often depicted as like being, you know, the like barbaric, it's like, you know, in Game of Thrones, where it's like, oh, the brown people are over there and they ride horses and they eat hearts. You know, it's like that. I think this was a little bit, which by the way, I love Game of Thrones. So not trying to throw too much shade, but I think that I know that Jasmine talked a lot about like wanting to flip that and have there be this esteem around, Vahar as this technological sort of marvel in the world, and that like the elves and stuff were like where Braesewald is like more war torn and has like more is like there's a lot of references to be like, ooh, you know, what's it like being from such a developing nation? Like I think there was a little bit of like that was supposed to be like kicking back all the times that we've encountered, like, yeah, yeah. So,
but I think that some things can be split into Avatar: The Last Airbender or like Legend of Korra, and I feel like this is Avatar: The Last Airbender, but with a tease of Legend of Korra coming. That's like emerging from Vahar.
Ooh,
I think Jasmine might have the maybe a more specific answer about like, oh, I was influenced by this exact time period. Maybe she told us that once, and I totally don't remember.
Yeah, that would be like, I have so many questions like for her, like world building wise, which would be interesting to dive into that a little bit. Okay, mm-hmm. We have one more fan question from Aline, and that question is, did playing DesiQuest change in any way your approach to D&D during the show, but also maybe carrying over to future games?
Hmm.
Ooh.
I think for me, it goes back to sort of like being a comedy first improviser and player, and that is not how I approach DesiQuest. And I think finding a deeper level of a deeper emotional, more interesting point of view for the character is like something that I'll carry forward. I would like to carry forward. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I'll say I think going forward, I'm hesitant to play in a game that doesn't feature Luis Carrazza.
Yeah, no shit.
I feel like everyone has raised the bar for every element of playing. Everyone at the table, Sandeep digs into emotion, like present emotion, better than anyone that I've ever gotten a chance to play with. And that's something that I want to step up. I feel like Anjali does such a great job playing the feelings you don't want to feel. And that's something that I'm picking up. And then Rekha is a monster of comedy. But her timing is unrivaled. Mm-hmm. And then Jasmine just has such a good sense of the world. And I think a comfort in the world. And that's something that I kind of want to play with going forward, where it's, hey, you're from here. You know, you're whether it's the exact town or not, you know, this is Earth. Like, whenever I see, like, I go to a zoo, I'll be like, wow, what interesting animals, instead of like, what is happening? What? I can't even, what is an animal? And I think that that's something that makes playing easier than I realized, just to accept things readily and instantly, and then already be on your toes to be like, what then? What next? And so I think from everyone, I kind of have a bunch of aspects of it. So just playing like richer, deeper, and more emotional, thanks to Daisy Quest. Yeah.
Great answer.
That's amazing. Well, these were all the fan questions and all the questions that I had for you. Thank you so much for this interview. Before I let you go, please tell everyone where they should go next after listening or watching this interview. Where do you want to lead them? And also maybe share like one small thing you are excited for them to see.
Yeah. Listen, I think to answer your last question first, it's the finale, and it's just, I think the experience of the entire show, like the binge, I think is going to be delicious. Like I really do think it lands the plane in a really exciting way. And, I'm really eager to see the reaction of the fans, after the whole show is out. So stick with it. I don't think we're going to do you dirty. I think you're going to enjoy it. And then the last thing is, you know, listen, you said it before, like, you know, you hesitated to say season because is there going to be more? Is this it? We hope there's going to be more. Two, we don't know that answer. We want there to be. This whole thing was kickstarted. So if you loved it and you want to support us, then the place to go is to our Patreon, to the daisyquest.com/Patreon, and join the fan club there. We give you exclusive access to podcasts with me and Omar that we host called The Tea Kettle, where we do a deep dive of every episode with folks from in front of and behind the camera. And so you get, you know, some really cool insights there. And you help support the cause, you know, in creating more of this show, and more of the world. And just supporting, you know, Jasmine as a storyteller, and all of us, I guess, as you know, creators in our own right. That's what we really want to build out of the Daisy Quest brand, I guess. So yeah, that's the spot to go to. If money's tight, that's, we totally get that too. Just go to daisyquest.com and sign up for our mailing list. That also helps and keeps you abreast of everything that's going on. Or share and spread the word about the show on every social media platform. So feel free to repost and all that stuff. And tell us about your experience. We want to hear from you. Commenting is the big, I gotta tell you, I've made shows for 20 years. I've been making shows on YouTube since before there was a comment button on YouTube, since before there was a subscribe button, right? Like early days. I have never seen such in-depth, incredible, insightful, interesting comments on a show than this show. Like, it's unbelievable. It definitely struck a nerve, and we love hearing it. It keeps us grounded. It keeps us moving in the right direction. So you know, that's another way you can just contribute. It's just hopping on the YouTubes, hitting those like buttons and subscribes and commenting.
Yeah, I think that pretty much takes it. If you want to hear more of our voices, check out ABCD, the podcast that we have when we're not Daisy Questing.
Yes.
Available anywhere podcasts can be listened to. And I'll say the thing to look forward to is we have so much good role play. We have so much good role play. But if you are someone who likes to dig your teeth into 5e combat, we've got I don't want to spoil too much, but I think there's a little like town marketplace fight.
Ooh.
That is classic D&D. If you're a D&D nerd and you want to, everyone takes a turn doing some stuff and you're imagining people running up and down through stalls and walls falling down and spells getting blasted back and forth, buckle in. It's one of my favorite fights I've ever been a part of. So nice. Get ready for that.